Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's June 13th, 2014. You're listening to the best, the longest running for now PokerCast on the planet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long. Tag, you're it.
All right, I get to leave now. Yay.
Your turn to go to Europe.
We can't
both be there at the same time.
Back to my homeland. although this time I won't be visiting the wonderful provincial town of Cosenza, Italy. I will just be going all over the north, from Rome north. So, very excited, going to be leaving. So, just a reminder, I'll be gone for a very long time. So, the next 5 weeks, we will be doing the sort of binge. Scott likes this Netflix binge thing. I'm still not completely sold on it, but yeah. I'm gonna try to upload them sometime this weekend after this show is updated and uploaded. So we'll see. We'll see how it goes. But we're gonna come back to our normal stuff. But while we're gone, we have an actual celebration to have that we could be celebrating today. But we're going to sort of postpone it. It's 9 years, buddy.
9 years.
9 years on June 15th, we started this show. And it's relatively close enough to this date that we can say it, that today's our anniversary. But, you know, because of this binge thing, we're going to be sort of reminiscing during those five shows. And one of those shows, I'm not going to tell you which one, because I don't know what we're going to do. Are we going to actually, like, have a particular order that we're going to tell everybody, or we're going to...
Here's the thing. Everybody already... Any of our long-time listeners know that we never have any idea what we're going to do anyhow.
Yeah, exactly.
So, no one's out there, like, gap-jawed shock right now. Hey, they don't know what they're doing? Oh! What are they going to tell us next? The sun's going to rise tomorrow?
Technically, the sun never rises. But, all right, so... but we will be back doing our normal poker casting stuff with O'Malley's Move returning on July 25th. But for the next 5 weeks after this show, we're going to be surprising you with the five shows that you all recommended for us to play in our little binge style thing. Unhinged with Binge.
I don't know. There we go. Look at that. Now, all of a sudden you're a marketer now.
Yeah, so I mean we're pretty excited about these five shows. I liked them. There's some interesting notes about them too. I guess I could tell you now since it's you know the next 5 weeks we're going to be actually talking about the actual show. So, but three of them came from our St. Pete Times days.
Yeah.
And two of them came from our Ante Up days. And very, very close in the voting. Joe Navarro missed the top five. So
yeah, that's how high the bar was.
That's how high the bar was. So it's pretty good, and we're very excited. So yeah, next 5 weeks we'll have some refreshing notes to comment on our five shows you guys suggested, and then we're going to play them for you. So get ready for that. I'm pretty excited about it.
Now, I know you're not going to the provincial town of Cosenza.
Right.
Or however you pronounce it, that doesn't sound like Cosenza.
Right.
But I'm hoping what I want is I want a little punch card of all the cities you do go to that sound like the way that callers butcher your name.
I don't know.
I was talking to somebody yesterday. Oh, I want to go on one of the cruises. We'd love to have you go on a cruise. And so who do I bought the book? I mean, you call Jeannie. You see that name right there? And oh, yeah, Jeannie. Quack, 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 quack. Like, close enough.
It's remarkable because if you just sound it out like any other word, there's no, you don't trip you up at all. It's
I
like,
think people get scared with the Z. You throw a Z in any word, and yeah, be like, what's that?
That's true.
You is see that even
Z,
English?
You can't even remember the first three syllables, you know, once you see the Z, I guess. But it is remarkable. Well, the thing I get the most is, like, George, right? No. Cosenza is not like Costanza. It's similar. And if somebody says it fast enough, maybe. But no, not like George. Sorry.
Oh, man. Well, while you're gone, the World Series is going to continue to go, so yes. People are just going to have to get their updates elsewhere because, you know, we will be back on July 25th. That's where we wrap. the last like 30 events of that show. So that's going to be a monster show. It might be more than the 3 hour, 14 minute 100 show at that point. But a lot of good stuff been going on since last week even. And first, Paul Volpe.
The Volpe?
Yeah, well, I don't know. It could be Volpe.
I think it's Volpe, yeah.
Volpe. Event 13, all right, this is a $10,000 buy-in, no limit, deuce to seven, lowball event, right?
Wow.
Gets to the final table. He is the only one at the final table that didn't have a bracelet at that time, and he's a great player, right?
Yeah, he's a good player, yep.
And by the time it was all said and done, he had his bracelet. He beat Daniel Negreanu heads up in it. So, but what a
star-studded
final table there.
Yeah, right? How intimidating for him. I mean, he's good and everything, but God, that's just awesome. You think, wow, everybody here's got a bracelet, and I don't. You know.
Now, granted, it's a 10K buy-in, so you don't get a lot of looky-loos like you and me playing in that. But I got to think, if for some reason I just accidentally entered that thinking it was one of the $1,000 ones, and I'm like, oh, okay, I'll play it anyhow, right?
Yeah.
I sit around, like, how tough is that?
Man, absolutely remarkable.
Because the whole field had to be pretty tough for the
Yeah, for that kind of buy-in, yeah, absolutely.
Show up like that, right?
Yeah, crazy. And that's like one of the ones they covet, too. They really like the no-limit deuces 7 because it's got a lot of bluffing in it, and it's a lot of history and stuff, so... They take a lot of pride in that event when they play it.
Pure, unadulterated, uncut poker, I think.
That's right. That's right. They never see any cards till showdown.
All right, and then Kalen McNeil, who won the Limit Omaha 8 title last year, came also close to repeating again this year, finished fourth out of 1,036 runners in the $1,500 event. That was event 14. Truly amazing to come back.
Yeah, absolutely.
The next year, the
same
event.
That size of that field, too.
Yeah.
That's crazy. I mean, he's obviously just gifted at that game. And the thing about it, too, I mean, you know, when we look at the stats from the tournaments that we run in our magazine, when we get them reported from the poker rooms around there, I mean, Omaha 8, you know, PLO gets some decent numbers, but Omaha 8 is usually like 6.
40.
Yeah, I mean, really, it's terrible. These guys got 1,036, and it wasn't even a $1,000 event. It was 1,500. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
So the numbers are definitely scaling upward. So it's going to be a pretty big main event, I think.
Yeah, it's definitely a guy I don't want to see at my limit on Omaha 8 table.
Yeah, no, this guy's got some chops when it comes to this game, man. Because I don't want to be at any limit on Omaha 8 table. So I don't care if Grandma Moses is sitting there. I don't want to play. But if I have to, I will. But yeah, Kalen McNeil, you got some chops, man. Much respect.
All right, so time for all of our Belgian listeners to laugh at me because there's no way I'm getting this name pronounced. Davidi Katai?
Sounds pretty good.
Close enough?
Yeah. Davidi, maybe? I don't know.
Ah, there we go. Anyhow, whatever, however you pronounce it. I'm sure it's a wonderful name. I wish I had a name like that. Anyhow, he was the first Belgian to ever win a World Series bracelet. Now he's got three because he won an event 15 this time, which is a $3,000 buy-in, six-handed, no limit.
Jeez.
And then Todd Bowie?
Bowie?
Are you sure it's Bowie?
Bowie?
They really should have a pronunciation guide for us.
They said B-U-I, Bowie.
Anyhow, I like this guy because he's channeling the short stack ninja that I'm trying to
emulate
here, right?
Yeah.
Exactly, yeah. He had just five big bets at one point during the 1,500 limit deuce to seven triple draw event. Rallied to beat Captain Tom Franklin heads up to win it in event 16. And so here's my first question. Doesn't it seem like there's 100 deuce to seven events this year?
Yeah, what's going on here? That's two in like four paragraphs here.
Yeah, and then we had like one last week when we in the first 11, right? One or
yeah.
two.
What is going on?
I never really noticed how many deuce to seven events they had on the schedule.
And it's part of the mixed ones too, probably.
Exactly,
so,
yeah.
I mean, you want to get your deuce to seven fix, you're going to get it here. That's a lot. I mean, and that's why it's only once a year, so everybody saves up for it. But usually there's like two a year of these things.
Yeah.
Max, you know? Wow.
You know, say, coming back from five big bets in no limit is a little easier, I think, and limit, particularly in triple draw. Yeah. I mean, you got to pick a hand, and you got to hope that things go perfectly for you at that point, right?
Yeah, because you waste all those bets on one hand, really, to get to the end. And if you don't make your draw, if you pair your deuce or something, you're screwed.
Yeah, because you have no chips to try to... I mean, it's tough to force anybody off a hand and limit anyhow. It's easier in triple draw, you know, if somebody misses or something, then they're usually going to fold. But if you've got no bullets to force them off the hand, right?
Yeah.
Then it's going to come down to showdown. You got to have the goods. So, mad props there.
Yeah,
I would like to see how he did that.
Not easy. Well, when they say there's luck in poker, that's probably what it was. It's probably he got lucky at least once in that whole situation.
Exactly. Well, the Seniors Championship, always a huge event. It was event 17 this year. 4,425 old people When I say old people, I mean that affectionately, because I'm going to be an old person very, very soon.
No, we mean Faso's age. Uh-oh, I feel another competition coming on. He's going to be challenging me to another race with his walker.
Oh, my God. You know, I was on the beach the other day because my niece and nephew were in town, right? And I don't really go to the beach much. And you're not on Facebook, so you don't really get this phenomenon, although maybe they do it on Twitter. But girls like taking pictures of their feet at the beach for some reason.
Are you serious?
I don't really understand it. But so, you know, I was trying to be funny, so I took a picture of my feet. You know,
oh, man.
One of a middle-aged guy's feet instead, right?
Oof.
And I shoot the photo, and I look, and there, I'm not lying at all. Folks that are my Facebook friends, go to Facebook and see this. There was a walker on the beach in between my feet and the water. Nobody near it. Just
a walker sitting on the beach.
How perfect of a Florida photo was that?
Wow, that's hilarious. And I've seen your feet. To take the focus away from those hideous things.
I did it in the shade so people didn't have to see the true contour and then the freakishly large toes and that kind of stuff.
And the discolored nails. Awesome. The yellowish nails. You don't want to see that.
So I'm not sure how I really got there, but let's congratulate Dan Heimiller on winning the Seniors Championship. Everybody seems to love this guy a lot, and he posted a really funny Facebook photo right before the final table, a big selfie of himself with the rest of the final table, and he went on to win it. So very, very excited that he added the bracelet here. And then Dennis Phillips, who I think is still one of the great guys in poker, finished fifth. So
yeah, finished fifth. I think that was the record field, right? That was like the largest. 4,425 people. That was like the largest senior ever, and then it was
massive.
Like the largest single day or something. It's just crazy how many people enter that event. How do you prepare for that?
Really, really look forward to it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and you know, Faso, you know, gonna have to change his way of thinking. I think because think about how much money you can win if you could just muster up to was it 1,500 to get in that thing?
I think it was 1,500.
Yeah, there you go. So.
So I don't know, maybe you guys talked about this when you guys, I still haven't gone back to listen to shows, but trust me, I've got 24 hours in the car over the next 7 days on my next trip, so I'm going to listen to it at some point. But I'm kind of wondering whether the fields are so big in this because these guys are just sick of playing against the punk kids, right?
Well, he sort of, Faso sort of touched on.
Did he?
On that would be a bonus, is not having to deal with, you know, the young whippersnappers posing for WPT cameras that aren't there. But we didn't really get into that was the reason why people entered it, but that could very well be it. It could be that they're seniors and they're saving their money, their senior citizen checks all year long to go do this one thing, and why not go to Vegas where it's nice and warm all the time? And I don't know. Of course, I'm imagining that these people are all ancient, and they're really not. I mean, I'm seven years away from entering it. You're eight and a half or whatever. So, I mean, really, it's just crazy to call these people old. You look at the photo of Dan Heimiller, he's not old.
No, of course not. Yeah.
So it's kind of just, you know, sort of a caricature of it. But I don't know. Maybe they are just doing that to get away from it. Or maybe it's just to be historic. I don't know. But it's growing every year. That's the thing. I don't know what's making it grow, because even those young punks or whatever you want to call them, and even that part of the game is dying down now. You know, it's just people have settled in, and we're all poker players, and we're not. We are or we aren't, you know. So I don't know if that's the reason. It's a good question, but it is pretty remarkable how much it grows every single year over year.
It makes me wonder, too, whether it's just because it's an exclusive event. You know, you got to have a ARP card to get into it, right? So I almost wonder if they do, like, the World Series Florida Championship, whether that would just break records, because everybody's like, hey, I'm from Florida, I can play and you can't.
Yeah.
Or, you know, hey, whoever's a CrossFit challenge, you know, show us your CrossFit receipt. I don't know what it is, you know, but I mean, I wonder if that's part of it too. It's just that it's, you
the
know.
American Astigmatism Championship.
Exactly.
If you need to close one eye to look at your whole cards, you can enter this event. All right, let's move on. Just a month after winning the World Series of Poker Circuit National Championship, Dominic, now I'm going to say it's Nitzke, but it could be Nietzsche, it could be, I don't know what it is. But
I'm just glad I'm not butchering it.
Nitzke gets his third bracelet, Event 21, and of course it's one of the 1K No Limit Hold'em events. So,
which I think arguably is the hardest one to win a bracelet in.
Sure, because you got all kinds of mix of people in that stuff, right?
And you're starting with 3,000 units. You know, right. I had a conversation with one of our staffers this week about, because he's getting ready, he and his wife are getting ready to go out to Vegas and take a shot. And they're playing events not at the World Series. They're playing Venetian, Wynn, places like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so the conversation I had with him is that, you know, no disrespect to the World Series, but I really think the big reason people play these events is because of the bracelet. You didn't have the bracelet and the status that went with the bracelet and all that. I think players would gravitate more to these other events around Vegas during this time because, I mean, you're starting in this 1,000 thing, you're starting at 3,000 units.
Yeah.
I mean, you walk in any tournament in any place in the United States and you sit down and they give you 3,000 units, you're going to sit up and walk away, right?
Yeah.
But at the World Series, you're going to plunk down $1,000 and be happy that you got 3,000 units. I think it's I'm not saying they should change it. I just, you know, I think it's a tough thing to do. And so the reason I'm bringing it up now is because, you know, you're starting with 3,000 units. You've got 5,000,000,000 people in this thing. And to win it, I think it's a pretty huge accomplishment no matter who you are.
Absolutely. Anytime the field rivals the population of most North Dakota towns, you're going to want a lot of chips. And when you don't have a lot of chips, it's just a crazy... I mean, some of these guys, and I'm sure Dominic's one of them, you know, $1,000 is nothing. Right. So they're like, hey, I want a chance to win a bracelet. And if I win this event, I'm going to win a ton of money because there's a lot of people in it, and I know I'm better than 90% of them. So
it's kind of like our $20 rebuy term on the cruise.
Yeah, exactly.
I got a 20.
Yeah, it's 20 bucks. Here's a Jackson. So, I mean, really, it's six of one half dozen of the other. You know what I mean? It's like, all right, well... Yeah, I don't want to play because I only get 3,000 chips. But at the same time, everybody else only gets 3,000 chips too, and they stink. So yeah. I'm gonna be able to weed my way through this field pretty easily, and then, so yeah, there's goods and bads, I guess, with this one. But very, very happy for this guy. I mean, you ever notice how people are always going on a tear? Like, you know, this guy just won that race,
right? Though,
yeah,
you know, you win a couple of events, you get the confidence, and then you just play really well.
It's just crazy. I mean, even what was it before Tom Franklin? He had just won a nice event before this. And then, of course, he's now a, you know, runner-up. He almost won another a bracelet with it. So these people just they hit a groove and they get confident and they go and hit it. So that's great. I'm happy for this guy. Pretty good.
And I'm really happy for this next one. A former Anti-Up columnist, Chris Fox Wallace, got his first bracelet. The 10,000 buy-in horse event, a great event.
Huge.
That's event 22, and by all accounts, a really, really great guy. I mean, all the folks up in Minnesota where he's based love him. He's ambassador for the Mid-States Poker Tour, I believe, now, and does some other stuff up there. And now he's a Blue Sharks Optics team pro, and just a really, really great guy. And glad to see him finally get his bracelet, you know, score one for the good guys.
Yeah, absolutely. I emailed him this morning congratulating him, and he's always in our magazine and just a good guy and, you know, wrote for us for as long as he could, and you know, now it's just a matter of just, you know, he went his separate ways with us, but not in a bad way or anything. He's a great guy. We're great friends with him, and we're very, very happy for him, and now I hope he gets that groove and wins another one between now and the end, so.
Absolutely.
Way to go, man.
Fantastic. All right, so we catch up through event 23 there, so the next 40, 50, 70 events, however many are left, are all on you.
All up to you, buddy.
We'll wait till July and then pick out some highlights there. But for all the listeners that are headed out to the series, and a lot of them are, from according to my Facebook feed, have a good time out there, win stuff, and we hope we'll be talking about you. Of course, when you win a lot of money in Vegas, save some to come sail with us. Our Anti-Up Poker Cruise website at antiupcruises.com will be updated hopefully by Friday night with our 2015 schedule. And, of course, you're a podcast listener, so you always get the first notice on what's going on. We briefly kind of mentioned this stuff last week, but here's a few more details to whet your appetite. February 9th out of Port Canaveral for 4 nights. April 10th out of Baltimore for 8 nights. October 25th out of Boston, sailing one way to Tampa for 13 nights. And then immediately following that same day, on November 7th, we're sailing for 5 more nights out of Tampa. And don't forget, we have 3 more sailings in 2014. July 28th out of Port Canaveral for 4 nights. October 19th out of Galveston, Texas for 7 nights. And now December 15th out of Tampa for 5 nights. Remember, that's a date change from our previous one. And hope to see you guys on the cruise. And remember, go to antiupcruises.com and call the day to book.
Yeah, absolutely. Get on that website and check out the ports that we're going to be going to. Some pretty exciting stuff. Some different stuff, especially that 13-night sailing. That's
going to
be...
Yeah, it's going to the Southern Caribbean. It's going to 5 ports that we've never gone to. Mm-hmm. Two of them are my favorite ports ever. One of the very first cruise I took some years ago.
I know how beautiful. One of them's St. Lucia. My brother has gone to St. Lucia a few times. Absolutely stunning there.
Yeah, I think Curacao is one of my favorite places. Yeah. Really, really cool.
Aruba, some crazy, crazy places we're going to next year. So make sure you check that stuff out and try to earmark some time with us because we love cruising with you. All right, each week we spotlight one of our listeners who calls the hotline at 206-338-6344 or emails us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com. And if they haven't won something from us in the past year, just like we do with Call the Floor and Hand of the Week, we send them something fantastic. This week's sponsor is Smapsoft, creator of the Chinese 13-card poker app for Apple products. Download the app today by visiting the iTunes Store. Comes from Mark Kalzer from Canada. He says, is there any rule in poker you'd like to see changed? The one I've been mulling over in Texas Hold'em is the one where, depending on the board, you can make a hand with only one card. Anyone who's played poker for even a small amount of time has seen their monster hand crumble when the board drops four suited cards, giving your opponent's offsuit deuce kicker a better hand. I'm not crying foul over bad beats here. I understand it's part of the game, and I do consider it in every facet of my game when it comes up. But is there ever a discussion of changing that? Do you ever wonder what the point of the game is when the board goes ace, king, queen, jack, ten, rainbow, and neither of you or your opponent has a hand to play? Maybe making it like Omaha, where you must use two cards in your hand to make a flush or a straight? Or is No Limit Texas Hold'em now so ingrained that there's just no way to implement such a rule change without just naming it a new variant entirely? Are there other rules you would like to see changed?
Well, let's see. I'll start with good luck trying to get No Limit Hold'em to change the rules. It's almost kind of like a fringe party candidate winning the general election. Not going to happen, I don't think. Although I think it's interesting. In fact, actually, I think I said, you know, hey, maybe you play around in your home games with playing Hold'em like Omaha, where you have to use two and see how it changes. That would be kind of cool.
Right.
If that ever takes off in the real environment, I imagine, as he mentioned, it's just going to be called a new variant. You know, I just don't see anybody ever wanting to change what it is. It's the game, and that's what it is. And as far as other rules you'd like to change, you and I talked about this before the show. It's such a weird question for me, to be honest. It's not a weird question. It's just I just don't think of poker rules ever needing to be changed.
Right.
I just think of the game changing with it, which I think is really interesting. You think you go back to like the 70s and how poker was played, and then now it's completely different, right? I think it's just people adapt to the rules differently, and that's what makes poker very exciting for me. I don't think it's one of these things where you need to go to changing from a wood bat to aluminum bat or whatever, you know. So I just don't think it's a game where people want the rules to change. I think it's a game where if you don't like what's going on, people just create a new game.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to see the rules changed. I want to see additional rules. like five red cards or five black cards beats something. You know, if I have a diamond and four hearts, I want to know that it'll beat your pocket aces.
A little gin rummy going on there.
Yeah, something legitimate, but kind of foolish, just to make the game lighthearted a little bit, maybe, you know. No, of course there are no rules I want to change. I mean, I really did blank on this. You know, you and I were talking earlier. I'm like, you know, I don't know. I mean, I guess there are stuff that I gripe about once in a while when it comes up on the show or something, but most of the time, it's people's actions that these rules are always being governed and changed. That's when you go to tournament directors. It's always the actions of the people that are being monitored. It's never the actual game itself because they've done all the research. They've done all the work and realized, hey, it doesn't work. You can't have three clubs beating three spades for no reason or, you know, whatever. Then that's just stupid. So they literally went through every possible combination, figured out what the odds were and what would beat what, and then they let it go, and that was it. So I like the idea that one card can give, you know, I mean, because it benefits you as much as it hinders you.
Exactly. So, that's a very good point.
So there's no reason to change that rule. And the other thing, too, is the last thing he said was, are there other rules you'd like to see changed? And he's saying it as if we're agreeing with him that we want that other rule changed. And I don't want that rule changed. I like the idea that you can actually play the board without having any of your cards. That's what gives the game flavor and a totally different twist. And that's why they always say you can learn it in a minute, but, you know, it takes forever to master because things like that. That's the beauty of that game. So no, I wouldn't want to change anything, to be honest. Right, at least right now, not that I can think of. If I wanted to play the game that he mentioned, where you had to play the two cards, I'd call it Texas Hold'em.
Hold'em.
Because, you know, like Omaha and Hold'em. But, you know, we do have variations, like when we play, like, three card, you know, like Tahoe. Mm-hmm. you know, where you're playing a variation of Hold'em and you have to play two from your hand, or one of them is you have to play two from your hand. I can't remember what it is, but yeah, it might have been Tahoe. Is it Tahoe when you do that?
No,
you get three and you get to keep all three. That's what it is.
Yeah.
But I mean, there's a variation like that.
Yeah, I'm not aware of a variation that does that, but it could be cool to play. But I'm kind of with you. I think if there's any rules to be changed, I want them to be about the people, not the game.
Yeah.
Like, I would sign any petition to have all players in a poker tournament have to provide a notarized statement that they bathe that morning.
Yeah, like, I was thinking the same thing. Like, you know when you go to the airport and you have to put your arms over your head and they got that thing that goes around you to see if you got anything on you? They got to do that with smell. You got to go through this big nose thing that smells you, and if you're over a certain level, you can't play in the tournament.
Yeah, if you hit more than 1,000 on the stinkometer, then sorry.
Yeah,
you know.
Sorry, you can't play.
Have to go to the bathroom and, you know, shower yourself in the sink or something, come back and try it over again.
Yeah, and then also I want Velcro on the seats so the guys can't just stand up and like scream and yell that they, you know, no, sorry, you got to remain seated. This is not on TV.
I'll tell you what's going to happen in that prom, though. People are going to still get up and they're going to dork you in the boy parts with the feet on the chairs. What's going to happen?
That's right.
Poor cocktail waitress is going to be walking by and trip over to the chair now because...
That's hilarious.
All right, let's go on to call the floor. If you find yourself in a situation that's your favorite poker room or home game and not sure what the proper ruling should have been, email us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com, and we'll have Antiup Poker Tour Tournament Director Sam Minatello tell you how he would have ruled. This week's sponsor is TournamentButton.com, which offers a variety of home dealer buttons with timers built right into them. You can even customize them with your own photo or logo and ask about the Antiup logo version. And use code ANTIUP for free shipping. This comes from Lance Collins in Houston, where I'm headed on Saturday.
Woo!
And he says, I was playing in a bar league tournament, and a player shoved after the flop. Three players were left to act after him. The first folded, and the next called. As soon as they did, the all-in player picked up his hand and put it on the table face up. The player who was last to act cried foul and said that the all-in's player hand should be declared dead. The player who had already called the all-in piled on, and an argument ensued. An argument at a bar league?
Never
seen it. I told the tournament director that I had seen that exact situation in a tournament in Las Vegas, and the floor refused to muck the player's hand. He disagreed, said he used to be a dealer, and that casino I was in had made a mistake. He ultimately said he'd give the all-in player a break, but that the correct action would be to declare the hand dead. The all-in player had flopped trip jacks, and they held. What was the proper ruling, and is the all-in player subject to a penalty, and what if this had been a cash game?
I have so much to say about this, so I can't wait to read Sam's thing. The correct ruling, according to Sam, the correct ruling is that the all-in player is protected here. It was unfortunate that he exposed his hand, giving the remaining two players in the hand added information, but his hand will never be killed. The penalty for exposing a hand is never as extreme as killing that person's hand. After the hand, I would have given the player a warning and politely asked him to wait for the dealer to inform him to show his cards before exposing them in the future. Poker players need to stop trying to win pots based upon technicality and win them with the best hand at showdown. Thank you very much.
Amen.
And you know, that's one of the things.
And there's much rejoicing.
Am I the only one, or do you also enjoy when Sam's ruling is exactly what I was thinking in my head the minute I read Lance's questions? And you just feel good that you're like, hey, I really do know this game better than I thought I did, because it's exactly what I thought. There's no way you can kill an all-in player's hand.
And not only the same, but then he throws in that last line.
Yes.
It's just so beautiful.
Yes, exactly.
Quit trying to win on technicalities, you cowards.
Yes, if you can't win without beating the cards, then you can't win.
Yeah.
But the other thing, too, is a couple of reasons for this ruling. One, the real reason is because that's total, you could have total, collusion. Because if you and your friend are all in and you need to pass your chips to your friend all in, you expose the card too early, and he wins the pot automatically by default. Yeah,
exactly.
And that's one of the things. Two, you have to protect that player. He's all in. So let's say he does, you throw him out, the hand's dead. The other two players have to now vie for your chips, and your hand's not even in there. It's just not right. It's wrong. It's aesthetically wrong. It's everything's wrong with it. So I'm very happy that Sam said that, because it's exactly what I was thinking. He is protected. He's all in. He made a mistake showing him. And the other thing I wanted to say was, that's why this guy who said, I used to be a dealer. That's right. You were a dealer. You weren't a floor.
Yeah.
Because if you were a floor, you would have known that rule. So that's why they always have to go to the floor, because a lot of the dealers aren't really taught all the rules. They're just taught how to deal. So this guy running a barley thinks he knows everything, but that was clearly a mistake. I mean, I know he let the guy stick in the tournament, but Yeah, there's no way.
Well, let's talk about this a little bit. I don't want to pile on this poor guy. Obviously, he's misguided, and the room he played, he worked in, obviously didn't train him very well, right?
Right.
But what's this? I'll give you a break.
Yeah.
Because here's the thing is, all right, so you're giving this guy a break, but you're penalizing everybody else because you're giving this guy. You're not giving anybody a break. You're making the tournament unfair for 9 people to placate 1. So don't act like you're doing something that qualifies you to be elevated to sainthood here, right? You know, and so, I mean, that to me, that exposes a fundamental lack of understanding of why we have rules in poker for this guy, and wherever he used to play and whatever he's trying to do. He doesn't understand that by helping one player, you're hurting somebody else. No matter what your ruling is, ever, that's what's going on. So you're trying to do the best decision for the game, not the player. And he clearly made in a weird way, he ended up doing the right thing by thinking he was doing the wrong thing. But never. I mean, if you guys are in your home games and or you're in these bar leagues, never use the excuse, oh, I'll let it slide this time, or I'm going to be doing something nice to you, because that's worse. That's the worst thing to do.
That's right, because the main thing is now you've got all these other people watching it, and you've set a precedence here. And you, by doing that, that means how every single person who does this mistake, you have to let them do it, because he's going to say, hey, you let Joe do that. You need to let me do it. Otherwise, you've created an unfair environment for us to all play in. So you need to understand that when you make a ruling, that's the ruling you made for the betterment of the game at that time, you know, rule number one of the TDA. Well, okay, but that's fine. But if you're going to call it out like that and say that you're literally going against the grain to do this for the guy, so that means you're aware of the grain and you're going against it. And that's not right. So you're absolutely right, Scott. There's just no reason. He's made it worse by saying that and then trying to make himself sound like he's a great guy. Instead, he's now got the entire bar league now going against him, saying, okay, we can always expose our cards and you can't do anything about it. Which is true. It's the real ruling, but you know, you can't throw somebody out of a tournament because they expose their hand. You just can't.
It's still amazing to me. It really is, honestly. I know it's a bar league, and there's some very, very well run bar leagues. I'm not picking on bar leagues. A lot of really terribly run ones, but there's some really good ones.
Right.
It still surprises me that even though they're not a real casino, that these people don't have 5 sheets of paper to print out the poker TDA rules and have it with them at the tournament at all time.
Yeah.
Or even print it. You don't even have, you just go to it on your phone.
Yep.
I mean, there's an app that you can buy and download. It costs money because it's, you know, trying to support the Poker TDA. But you don't even need that. As long as you have an internet connection, you go to the Poker TDA website and look at the rules in the middle of it. So, I mean, I don't understand why these kind of things happen in these situations. And we got a call before. I don't think we've used it yet. Maybe it's coming up. But it was a home game, too. And I think what my first response was, you know, hey, for your home game, print out these rules. Here's the link. Print them out. Have them there. Because it was like this huge fight that went on for like an hour. And like, the fight would be over in a minute.
Yeah, the amount of time you spent fighting.
Show the rule.
Done.
Here's what it is. And you could spend the rest of the hour fighting about whether the rule is right or not. But at least you have the rule and you have some peace of mind that you're at least doing something the correct way, whether you agree with it or not.
Yep.
So, you know, I think so for Lance and other folks that are in these situations, when you're arguing with a floor at these less than official place or even an official place, I would say, hey, show me in the Poker DDA where that says that.
Yeah.
And if they don't know where it is, get out your phone and call it up and show it to them and, you know, ruin their day for being an idiot. It's just so easy, you know?
I know. It's so simple. And, you know, when you got the entire world at your fingertips, Why sit there and waste the energy of bitching and moaning with each other and yelling at each other and causing hurt feelings or ruining a home game when you could just literally just say, all right, hang on a second, let's look it up, you know, stop the timer for a tournament, whatever.
Right. So, you know. I mean, I guess in the other thing, too, I mean, that's my first suggestion to people. And then there's a couple basic tenets, I think, of the TDA in general. One is, as Sam said, you're never going to muck a hand. Right. You know, unless it touches the muck, that kind of stuff. I mean, in these kind of situations, mucking a hand is always the worst thing to do. So that's something to keep in mind. And, you know, and then when there's significant action, you're never going to re-deal, misdeal, all that kind of stuff. You know, once you have significant action, you're going to finish out the hand the best you possibly can. Once a hand is exposed, you're going to finish out the hand the best you possibly can. Mucking or re-dealing is just the last case scenario. So those are probably things that guide you, you know, when you have a situation and say, hey, wait a minute, hold on.
Yeah.
when someone says redeal, are you sure we need a redeal here? There's probably a better way of doing it. But and then Sam didn't really mention what would happen in a cash game, but I would say that, you know, in a cash game, you know, exposing cards happens all the time, and I don't think you can't really penalize somebody in a cash game. But I mean, I think after the hand, obviously, you can have a conversation with the player and tell him that's inappropriate, and that if he does it again, they're going to walk him out for the night.
Yeah.
You know, but certainly in a tournament, you've got to finish the hand, and then you can penalize after the hand. It's always probably the way to go with most of these. You're not going to penalize in the middle of the hand.
Absolutely. And like you said, in a cash game, if people sort of get a sort of a reputation for doing that, then you sort of ban them from the room or, you know, tell them they can't play in the room for a month or something like that because they've been intentionally violating their rules and trying to angle shoot, and it's something they won't stand for. They want a fair game, square game, whatever. So, but that's probably what would happen in a cash game, you know, if they're perpetually doing this. But, yeah, I'm so glad Sam's out there for us to show all this stuff because you can't muck a guy's hand. There's all in for the tournament life. You just can't do it.
Yeah. All right, it's time for Hand of the Week. Send your hands or situations to podcast at antiupmagazine.com. This week's sponsor is J Design Playing Cards, the official playing cards of Antiup. Check out J Design's great cards and more at classicplayingcards.com. And I went to our swag database, and I don't believe we've ever given JLB Sox, Jason Booker, swag before. Is that possible?
Ever?
If not, maybe he's hidden use a pseudonym or something, but...
Well, we let him play in our home game once. That's the ultimate swag, because he could just take as much money from us as he wants, because we're so terrible. But that was a great day, playing with him and Ben. Those guys coming down from Connecticut, and
yeah,
a lot of fun.
Hopefully we'll get them on the 13-night Boston Cruise next year.
Yes, but I can't believe we've never given him swag.
It doesn't seem like it, so he's getting some now. So if he's pulled one over on us, you know, hey, that's what you get for being a loyal listener for as long as you have. So.
Yeah.
All right, he says he was playing in a $130 multi-table tournament at Foxwoods.
Hey, Foxwoods.
Blinds are 100-200 with a quarter ante. And he's in the big blind. The under the gun in this hand is the villain. And Jason says, I've been at the table for about two orbits, and the villain has been here for two hands. We both have stacks of approximately 20,000.
Okay.
The villain limps from under the gun. Three other players limp. And it's us in the big blind with 10 deuce. Texas Dolly.
Texas Dolly, and, well, what's he do with it? It's all limp to him, right?
Yeah, it's limp to him, so I'm assuming we're going to just...
He checked?
Well, this is the point where we discuss the hand.
Oh.
Is this your first hand of the week?
Oh, I don't know. So, that's right. Let's see. I would check. I mean,
this is on vacation already, every folks.
Well, I don't know the way this guy plays. He's only been here for, what'd you say, two hands? So, and he's going to be the villain. But, I mean, at this point, you know, I've only been here for two orbits myself. I don't know if I'm going to get cute with this hand. Especially when somebody limps under the gun, you don't know if they have a big hand. Then you're just going to waste money. So I'm just going to check my option and hope I flop something decent. And if not, get the hell out of there.
Of course. All right, so that's exactly what he does. And the flop comes Jack, 10, Deuce, Rainbow.
Huh.
And the small blind checks to us.
Well, at this point, I think I need to probably bet. And the reason being is because I want to know if Jack Deuce is out there. I mean, Jack 10 is out there. And the other thing, too, is, you know, a lot of times when you're in the blinds and you bet out and everybody's limped, they're all going to think you got your big blind special hit or something.
Exactly.
So
yep.
So there's no reason not to bet here. I guess there was about 1,000 in the pot. Is that what? Or 1,200?
Because it blinds. Yeah, let's see. One limper, four.
Oh, and then the antes.
Five, so. Yeah, five. So 1,000 plus the antes.
Yeah, so about 1,250. So yeah. I would probably bet about 600 or so, 700 maybe 650, something like that. Because I think with 20,000 in my stack, any bet I make is not going to hurt me at all. So I might as well put a feeler out there and see if, you know, if there's something out there that's worth fighting against or whatever. I mean, two pairs pretty good. It's top and bottom, which as TJ Cloutier would tell you, it loses the most money in poker, but we'll see.
Yeah, definitely in a limp pot, I'm worried about a Jack 10, but you're right, so I want to ferret that out pretty quickly. Also, I'm worried about straights getting there. I mean, you know,
yeah, Ace King Queen.
Ace Queen. I would think Ace King would have raised, but Ace Queen might not have, as we talked last week. Or
King Queen.
You know, King Queen is a very possible hand. And even maybe a 9-8, you know, suited connector or something that's in there too. So, Even though it's a rainbow, I'm kind of worried about where it's going. So I'm going to bet pretty big like you did and see what happens.
Okay.
All right, so our hero says, I don't want to see this get checked around and go to the turn five-handed, so I feel like betting is the only option in my mind. I bet 550 into the 1250 pot.
All right.
A little lighter than I would have, but it's significant. It's not a teaser bet.
Yeah, it's not too far away from what I said, so I'll agree with it.
The under-the-gun player calls and everyone else folds, so we're heads up now.
Sweet.
He says, I started thinking of the hands the villain may have limped with that hit this flop. I put him on a range of king 10, king jack, king queen jack, queen 10, jack 10, 10 9, 9 8, and deuces through sevens. So pretty much everything.
Yeah.
I haven't really eliminated much from the range.
Yeah, except for the premium hands. Everything else is pretty much listed there. So that's a pretty big range, but I think that we could probably narrow it down again on the turn. I don't know if somebody would limp with king 10 under the gun. I mean, they could. I mean, anybody plays any hand any time, but I don't know if they'd really limp under the gun with a few of those hands, but maybe they would. I don't know. If they're suited, maybe. Like 10-9, maybe. Usually you raise with a hand like that to keep it disguised, or 9-8. You don't want to limp with it. I don't know. Maybe.
But even king 10, I think, is king 10 queen 10 are loose calls here at this point. Because, again, when the blind bets out, I got to give him credit for, at worst case, a jack, right?
Yeah.
Which has you beat right now. With not a lot of help coming for you. And usually it's something like we have here, two pair or a set or something like that. So I think it's extremely loose call, I think.
And if the person had a set, would he just call on a straight possibility board, getting there on the turn with other people behind him to act? Like, if he's under the gun, he still has the other players to act behind him. Would he just call with a set there? You know, would he just call? I don't know. So if he had king jack, or, you know, queen jack, he'd have top pair, decent kicker, he might raise too. So a lot of those hands get ferreted out too by given the story and the people that are in the hand still. So I think we're ahead, and I'm glad we're heads up.
All right, so what do we think about jack 10 now? Because I think you and I both thought this is the hand that we're most scared about. Does jack 10 just call here?
Yeah, that's tough. I don't think jack 10 does call there,
particularly
either.
Particularly with, what,
five players in the hand?
Three more players left to act after you?
Yeah, I don't think that you just call with jack 10 there. You want to protect that hand. It's a very popular straight possibility up there. A lot of the big cards come into hands. A lot of the 8-9s and 9-8s would limp behind the under-the-gun guy once that happens. So, yeah, I think you want to protect your hand. And if somebody's betting out and it's in the blind, you're hoping he has 10-deuce or jack-deuce.
Exactly.
You know, so you want to see if you can get more money out of this guy. And you could slow play, but do you really want to when the turn comes?
This thing is so dangerous for three people left at this point. So, I mean, not that I'm eliminating jack 10, but that's the big hand I'm worried about here, right?
Yeah.
The fact that he didn't raise in his position where he is, the fact that we don't have much information on him, right, because he's only been here two hands, I'm going to default to what normal player would be. I'm feeling a little bit better about my hand right now.
Yeah, me too. I really think we're ahead. And not, I mean, it's not too often that you flop two pair that you're ever behind. So, you know, I like his bet out, and I like the fact that we got one player ahead left with us now, and that he only called. I hate that we're out of position against him, but I think we're ahead that it's not going to matter.
All right, well, the turn is another 10, and now we have all four suits on board. Board now is jack, 10, 10, deuce, and we're first act.
All right, well, that's pretty huge. I mean, you can't put this guy on jack-jack. You know what I mean? You just can't. So, I mean, basically, only jack-10 were behind, and again, we kind of ruled that out, so I feel like we can just value bet the rest of the way and hope this guy has something like, you know, jack-deuce or even a set of deuces, and it just didn't raise for some reason.
Well, the king-queen, and hopefully straight gets there and thinks it's...
So that's a sweet, sweet card for us. I mean, I guess I would bet. It wouldn't be a lot, though. I mean, I wouldn't want to just totally scare this guy who's got a draw, so I want to make sure that, well, there's like 2,300 in the pot now, I guess, maybe 2,400. Yep. So, you know, maybe 1,200, something like that.
All right.
What do you think?
I think you're right. I think we're value betting at this point, so I might even go as low as 800. 1,000 probably is more likely, because I'm just going to pick up a 1,000 unit chip because I'm a stupid player like that. But somewhere between 800 and 1,200, I think, is appropriate.
Yeah, because I think if we check, it looks kind of fishy. What? How does that 10 really scare us? I mean, I guess if we only had a jack, it could have scared us, but it gives us two pair now with the jack that we had. You know what I mean? So why would we have checked it if we check it? So I think a bet is called for here.
Sure. All right, well, Hero decides to check, and he says, I almost certainly have the best hand, but obviously not the nuts. I feel like I'll be lucky to get two streets of value from this hand.
Hmm. Yeah, like I said,
it might be the case, but if you're only going to get one street, why not get it now and not have to worry about
the river,
this guy hitting some miracle car, which I don't know what it could be, but...
Right, well, if he has something like King Jack, and then a Jack comes, now he's got Jacks over Tens fulls, or...
True.
Tensful. Yep. Yeah, there's a miracle card right there. So, yeah, you really want to get your money now and not let somebody suck out on you if all they have is a pair of jacks to go with their tens, and you don't want to see some random two-outer on the end to suck this pot away from you. I want to bet now. I don't want to give anybody free cards when I have a good hand that's still vulnerable.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not worried about trying to get two streets of value. I mean, I'll worry about what happens on the river when we get to the river, if we get to the river. So. All right, so we check, and our opponent bets 1250 into the 1800. I don't know how it's 1800, but that's what he says.
Yeah,
anyhow, he bets 1250.
Okay. That's nice. Again, the only hand we're really afraid of is Jack 10, and we kind of put that out of our head. So I don't know. I don't know if I'd call and check though. I think I would. You know what I mean? I think I would, if I'm going to call, I'd probably bet out. I don't know. See, that's weird. I wouldn't have checked, so I'm not sure what to do now. I mean,
it's kind of weird because now, I mean, there's a case to be made that we could check raise because we feel pretty good about our hand. And this guy put a bunch of money in. But at that point, I mean, I guess if we go back to, I'm trying to play it from Jason's point of view. He's trying to get two streets of value. So if you raise here, obviously this guy's bluffing, then he shuts down, and we only got one street of value, right?
Yeah.
So at this point, I guess he's given us the opportunity to get two streets of value out of it now by just calling here and then either betting or checking and hoping he fires a third bullet on the river and gets it. So, I mean, I guess playing the way Jason's trying to play now, I think the best option is just to call here and then flip a coin on whether you bet out or hope that he bets on the river.
Yeah, because, I mean, I guess I wouldn't be too opposed to getting it all in with tens full. So if I did raise and the guy came over the top, you know, I guess I wouldn't mind getting it in with tens full. I'm not folding tens full here.
Well, at this point, too, when we've really, I mean, you know, more power to him if he has Jack 10 than we get it. So,
I mean, at that point, then, you know, but if he wants to do pot control and he's just trying to play his small ball Dan Negreanu type of game, then by all means, just call here. I mean, I can see both ways, calling to keep.
But I'm going to call. I'm going to Hollywood this thing up, right?
Yeah.
I'm going to sit there and hem and haw and think about it and put it in and then check and then have this guy, you know, make a huge mistake on the river again.
Yeah.
That's what we're going to have to do at this point. I don't think you can call here and then bet out. At that point, now you're killing the value, right?
Yeah, and don't over Hollywood, but Hollywood long enough that it's stressful.
Exactly.
All right.
All right, our hero this says, at this point I'm putting him on a 10 of some sort, maybe a jack. I'm not sure what to do if I raise and he re-raises. I don't want to get my whole stack in, so I just call.
Yeah, so he's playing small ball here. Because, I would not have a problem, $130 tournament, getting it all in with 10s full. You know, I mean, this guy could have anything. He could just have ace-jack for all we know and just was a funny player limping with it under the gun. Who knows? But to me, I can't fold this hand, so if I had to get it all in, I would.
All right, the river is a king, so our final board is Jack 10, 10, Deuce, King. And, of course, the worst first act again.
Let's see. Well, I guess King 10.
King 10 has his beat.
Yeah, if he was actually playing King 10, which I really don't put this person on King 10 betting out with earlier with just 10, so I don't really think he has King 10. King Jack is losing to us. So, really, what the only hand that beats us is Jack 10 and King 10. We ruled them out, so this doesn't bother me. I might as well bet out now and see if he wants to raise me. You know what I mean? I really feel confident in his hand now. So,
sure.
I'd bet out whatever half the pot is.
All right. our hero says, I'm certainly not contemplating folding, but now King 10 and Jack 10 are both beating me. I check planning to at least call his river bet. I guess I don't necessarily have a problem here. I think it's probably part of a reason where I don't trust my analysis of the hand. Mm-hmm. I really, we talked about it. King 10 doesn't make sense, Jack 10 doesn't make sense, and that means we should have the nuts here. But for some reason, in the back of my mind, I'm just thinking maybe this guy just is playing terribly and got there. So the check call seems to be a safer route. I think the more proper bet route is what you said, and to bet out, because it just doesn't make sense for us to be losing at this point the way it's played. So,
well, let me ask you this, too. He says that I plan to check and call, at least call his river bet, right? Is that what he said?
Right.
So if he plans to at least call the river bet, then it sounds like no matter what this guy bets, you're going to call. So if you're going to call no matter what he bets, you're running the risk of this guy saying, all right, I give up on my
checking behind,
behind you, and then he shows down a value hand that you probably could have got some money out of him for. So why wouldn't you in turn make that bet? Because if he raises you, then it doesn't matter. You were going to call whatever he bet on the river anyway. You got tens full. Right. I mean, can you really fold tens full here to a random king 10 or a jack 10 that makes no sense by the way the betting went? So,
I mean, this guy could be making a move on us on the turn, right?
Absolutely.
Because we checked, right? So it's like we took a stab at this pot. All right, you caught me, and checked again. Boom, now we called because we must have something going on. And now the king comes. Maybe he thinks our king is good. And bet. I mean, we bet out. Then maybe he's going to raise us, thinking that we're just trying to steal this thing.
Yeah.
And then you're right. At this point, I'm happy getting my stack in. And maybe that's the wrong thing, but I'm happy getting it in. So I'll let him make another mistake. But I'm gonna bet, protect my hand, or protect my value. That's what I mean, I guess.
Yeah, tens full. I just,
if he calls, great. If he raises, great. And if he folds, well, we weren't going to get any more out of him anyhow, right?
So right. I mean, unless the only way is if he bluffed. But then, you know, at that point, how do you know he's going to bluff? You know, you got to know this player is aggressive. We only played two hands with him, so got to go to ABC there and try to get your money out of them.
All right, so like I said, we check. Our opponent bets 2,500.
Nice.
And River says, I tank. He says, about a minute, which is an eternity for me. he says, I'm not folding, but I can't decide between a call and a raise here. I'm thinking that Jack 10 and King 10 are very reasonable holdings for him. If I raise and he shoves, I'm going to have to fold my hand. I really don't want to fold. All right, before I go, what you're going to obviously raise here, right?
Yeah, I mean, here's the deal. Jack 10 in a vacuum, and we don't know how he played. We just go from preflop to the river without knowing anything in between. Jack 10 is a reasonable hand, but the way it was played and the way that it came down, it's not reasonable to me anymore.
No.
Unless he's just an absolute clueless person. To me, it's not reasonable anymore. And King 10 wasn't reasonable by the way it was played either, by the fact that he would have bet out with middle pair or, you know, after we bet out. I mean, something tells me that King 10 isn't reasonable either, to be honest with you. When you play the hand over, though, to me, in my head, when you play it from the beginning, how he responded with those hands, it doesn't make sense. Would King 10 have done that? Would Jack 10 have done that? And when we talked about it, we said no. So I don't think they're reasonable. In a vacuum, maybe. But now, there's not a chance. So, yeah, I would have raised them.
Now, the one thing I will say is we've only had two hands with this guy, so, and it's fairly early in this tournament, it seems like, 100, 200, right? Yeah. Quarter ante, probably, what, level 4 or 5 the most?
Right, 5, probably.
So, as confident as I am in our analysis right now, I might be willing just to take the flyer and take the 2,500 he's given us and not take the chance of going broke on some guy that we don't know that just might be crazy stupid enough to play King 10 weird.
Yeah.
Or Jack 10 weird.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm not going to fault him for calling here, although I would think a raise is the better way to go.
Yeah, and again, I think I would have bet out anyway. But you know, regardless, I think there's nothing wrong with calling there, but the reasons he gave for only calling, I don't think, to me, didn't seem plausible.
That's a good point.
But still, there's nothing wrong with calling there. You're doing well. If you win the pot, it's a nice pot. You only had 20,000 going in. Now you've basically double or got a 50% of your stack there back more.
Yeah.
So what the hell? I mean, a call isn't a mistake. I'm just saying I think I would have played this hand a lot differently from beginning to end.
Sure. All right, well, our hero decides to call, and the villain flips over ace-queen for a rivered Broadway. So he says two things. I am shocked that he would limp under the gun with his hand. I guess I just don't play enough live poker, but I can't remember ever seeing this play online, even in the lowest stakes. I did not consider ace-queen as a possible holding at any point in the hand. And two, I'm not happy that I played this hand so passively. I feel like I didn't get nearly enough value in this spot. Would you have played this hand more aggressively? Should I raise the turn of river? Am I wrong to not raise river thinking there would be no way I could call a shove? What about my check and turn on the river 2 weeks? I think all the last questions we answered.
Yeah, I think so.
Now says, but the ace queen is interesting. And Jason and I went back and forth. Looks like about six messages back and forth about this. Because I'm not at all shocked that this guy limped with ace queen. I think a lot of us have realized. I know my game ace queen is a big leak that I plugged. Ace queen has really become a trap hand now.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just one of these hands where, obviously, if I'm first in, so I'm not defending the guy's limp here because he was first in. I'm going to raise with ace queen if I'm the first in all the time, or almost all the time. But it's a hand that I'm going to be limp with quite a bit less now, and hope to hit two pair or better. You know, I'm not just trying to hit my ace. I'm not trying to hit my queen. I get away from it. So I think it's one of these hands that people are getting bitten by so much now that they're starting to play it a lot more passively than they normally do. So. Doesn't surprise me at all that he limped with it. I guess what I'm surprised about is that he called a bet on the
flop. He called 550 with a gutter.
Gut shot, yeah.
And then it only gets worse on the turn, and then when we check...
Then he turns it into a bluff. And then it turns it into a double. And I guess in his mind he was value betting on the end.
Right.
Because we played it so passively that he couldn't really put us on our hand either. So, yeah. But... That was his problem was calling that flop bet. But,
yeah,
but I see a lot of people limping with ace queen now, so I'm not surprised at all anymore.
I mean, when you whiff completely like that, you know, I mean, that's a complete whiff. I mean, yeah, a gutter and maybe one over, but and then when the guy checks to you, then you bet out. I mean, that's pretty ballsy to do that. It's so weird. It's like he's played it terribly and brilliantly at the same time.
Yeah,
you know, and yet when that happens, you know, the guy really isn't very good. Because he just don't know what he's doing. You know what I mean? He's saying, oh, this guy checked, I'll bet. You know, maybe I can steal it now. But he doesn't really understand that that's a great play. He's just doing it. You know, at the same time with, why are you, you know, calling a gutter is one thing. You raise maybe to get the free card or something. Obviously, in a limit, it's a lot different. But, you know, no limit, you know, maybe you're trying to, you know, you have position, you're trying to take control of the hand. Then he checks you, and then you get the free river to hit your gutter or whatever, or your ace if you think it's good. But then bet out for no reason on the turn there, you know, just to try to steal it. You know, it's weird. I don't think the big blind's going anywhere, so why bet that turn when I get that free card at the end to try to make your Broadway and think, because he obviously thought it was good when he got it.
Yeah, I think that's the mistake, is now you say, oh, the 10 came now, I can really scare this guy. But you got to think that the big blind bets out, he's got something.
Yeah.
And the 10 is very likely at that point.
Very
so,
possible, yeah.
You know, I think you're right. At that point, I'm just going to err on the side of caution and hope I catch up.
Yeah, unbelievable. Well, I'm glad Jason is playing poker and not being depressed about the baseball season like we are, because both of our teams are absolutely horrid this year in the AL East. So I'm glad he's putting his frustrations to poker and taking down some pods at Foxwoods. All right, another good show. Remember, next 5 weeks, they're all coming to you pretty quickly, so binge.
Either binge or conserve.
And
it's like, you know, putting all the food for the cats in the bowl one day. You know, I got to tell them, you know, hey, I'm not going to be home until late tonight, so don't chow it all down right now. Save some for when you get hungry later.
I can't believe you said that. I have to bring this up now. So my parents went away.
I love this story.
My parents went away to Aruba when I was like 16. They're like, hey, you got a house sit for us. Or when I was like 18, you got a house sit for us. And I'm like, all right. So I went back to the house, and I had something really exciting to do that weekend. I couldn't keep going back to the house. So I put down one of those giant silver salad bowls, and I filled it with food for my cat, Groucho. And when my parents came home, he ate it all in one day. The cat was like one of those Macy's Day Parade, you know, big balloon things floating over the... I mean, he ate it all in like one day. I almost killed the cat. So don't do that. Don't put the food out for the cat. It's just... not good, so absolutely gross. But yeah, when it comes to Annie Up shows, yeah, if you want to binge on them all, go ahead. I feel so weird because I know I'm saying goodbye for like 6 weeks, but you're going to hear my voice for five shows, so I don't know what to think about this. So anyway, hope I come back safe from Italy with some funny stories, and we'll see you guys soon. I'm Chris Cosenza. See you at the tables.
Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.